This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about our institutions. Miranda Devine is going to join us to discuss Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the institutions. Natalie Winters joins us to give us an update on government corruption and a prosecutor who's gone after serial killers. What a show tonight on I'm Right. Let's have a discussion about institutions. We've had this discussion many times before. We're going to have it again because the institutions of your country will determine the direction of your country. If you have good institutions, they will produce the people you need to further your country. And if you have bad, rotted, corrupt institutions, they will tear down your entire country because they produce bad, rotted, corrupt people. I'll use this example before we talk about ours very briefly. If you were starting a college football program from scratch, and I could get you had two options. I was giving you two options. You could have A, the greatest recruiting class ever, all the best players you wanted for 1 year, they're all yours. Or B, you could have the best coach, the best trainers, the best facilities, the best recruiting department. Which one of those two should you choose? The coach, the training facilities, the recruiting department. Why? Because that's an institution that will produce great player after great player, great class after great class. The institution is much more important than the class itself. Here in the United States of America, our institutions were attacked and seized over the last several decades by the American communist. Famed communist Gramsci noted that we needed to, when he said we, he was talking about the commies, that they needed to march through the institutions because the communist understands the institutions, as they go, so go the country. So the communists began conquering ours. Our education system is the most damaging thing they managed to conquer because our entire population is filtered through that institution. So you don't want one class of graduating students to be hardcore America-hating communists. You want every class to be hardcore America-hating communists. And that's why communist John Denver does the things she does.
They want the world to be what it is for them. They want the billionaires to have the power. Look what Elon Musk is doing. It's like it's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Trump campaign. You heard Trump. Eat the dogs, eat the cats, create the fear. The only way that we overcome that fear is when we knock on doors.
America's test scores are in free fall. To be frank, and you know how much I love this place, compared to other nations, our literacy levels are embarrassing. I'm embarrassed by our population now. So our kids, they can't do math. They can't read. They can't write. Can't compose a decent sentence anymore. But they do graduate knowing Republicans are evil. You see, because the communists took over the education institution, thus ensuring generation after generation of America-hating communists. They didn't go after one class. They went after all of them. And they use the legitimacy of the institutions against you. You see, the FBI is actually a great example of this. The FBI, people will cite FBI statistics, FBI this, FBI that. Well, the communist understood forever. Remember, the communist wants violent crime. He does. Violent crime creates angst in society. It creates chaos and angst and chaos. That's where communism can grow. So he wants violent crime in a society. Well, the FBI, its role should be to stop that violent crime, at least to report on the violent crime numbers or whatnot. So if you're a communist, what do you do about that? You don't want to take on the FBI. You take over the FBI. Remember what our friend, former special agent Steve Friend said? Remember this?
Mr. Friend, you ever been to a school board meeting?
Yes, I have.
FBI ever sent you to the parking lot of a school board meeting?
Yes, they have.
And in the parking lot of a school board meeting where the FBI sent you, you were taking down information regarding people's license plates.
That's correct.
Now, wasn't the first time you'd been to a school board meeting, was it?
No, I went on my own as a private citizen.
As a parent?
Yes.
And so there you were. It must have been quite an interesting perspective. There you were taking down the information of people, parents attending school board meetings on behest of the FBI. And you had been one of those parents at a school board meeting. How did that feel?
Well, after I attended privately, my colleagues teased me that they were probably going to start investigating me.
Don't take on the FBI. Take over the FBI. And that's what the communists did. And once you do things like take over the FBI, again, you can use the legitimacy the agency had for your own evil purposes. Everyone knows, for instance, violent crime is way up. Everyone knows that. Everyone with eyes can see it. It's up. Robbery, murder, rape, it's up everywhere. They turn our criminals loose and they import more of them. So everyone knows it's up. Well, if you're a communist who wants more violent crime, people finding out about that is a big problem for you. So what do? Well, you get the main reporting agency, the FBI, to simply lie about it. You see, the FBI, they're no longer taking statistics. They're no longer getting statistics from the highest crime areas. I kid you not, the FBI in a calendar year reported that New Orleans and Los Angeles had zero murders. Yeah, I don't buy that. But once you take over the FBI and the legitimacy of the FBI, then it allows you to stomp on Trump in a debate when he's bringing up violent crime.
Crime here is up and through the roof. Despite their fraudulent statements that they made, crime in this country is through the roof. And we have a new form of crime. It's called migrant crime. And it's happening at levels that nobody thought possible.
President Trump, as you know, the FBI says overall violent crime is actually coming down in this country. But
they were defrauding statements. They didn't include the worst cities. They didn't include the cities with the worst crime. It was a fraud, just like their number of 818,000 jobs that they said they created turned out to be a fraud.
Of course, he's right. It was a fraud. So if you're the communist and the truth is your enemy, facts are your enemy, they impede the revolution you're fighting, you simply take over the institutions who decide what truth and facts actually are. And maybe even more frightening than the FBI is what they've done with the intelligence agencies. Miranda Devine is going to join us in a moment. She's talking about the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, criminal enterprise stuff. And Miranda Devine has some interesting things to say about the intelligence agencies. Now, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I hope you slept well last night, did you? What if you could guarantee 8-9 solid hours of sleep every night? How much would that improve your entire life? Every part of your life. It improves your day at the office, your relationships, your leisure time, everything. All you need is some dream powder from Beam. All you need to do is sip on a cup of hot chocolate before bed. That's what dream powder is. Mine's cinnamon chocolate. It's delicious. Just sit and drink it. Natural. It's all natural stuff, melatonin and things. And you go to sleep and you wake up feeling so good. Go. Get a huge discount. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
The FBI is now investigating whether those alleged Hunter Biden emails are actually connected to a larger foreign intelligence operation.
They may be related to a foreign intelligence operation.
Foreign intelligence operation.
Foreign intelligence.
Foreign intelligence.
Foreign intelligence operation.
For all we know,
These emails are made up.
The information found on the laptop may be part of a Russian disinformation campaign.
Part of a Russian disinformation effort.
Described by many intelligence experts as having hallmarks.
All the hallmarks.
All the hallmarks of a Russian.
Or Russian disinformation.
Russian disinformation.
Disinformation campaign.
This is a classic example of the right-wing media machine.
Ah, yes. The memories. Joining me now, one of the great columnists in the country and author of a new book about the Bidens called The Big Guy, Miranda Devine, joins me. Miranda, you've been all over this Russian collusion hoax for quite some time. I bet that video montage brings back some memories for you.
It sure does, Jesse. Thanks for having me on. I mean, it's really quite surreal to look back at that period before the 2020 election and just how dishonest not just the media and not just social media that censored us and locked, you know, Twitter locked our account at the New York Post after we published the first stories from Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop, which kind of looked bad for Joe Biden because it showed that he had lied when he said he knew nothing about Hunter's overseas business dealings, because we had emails showing that he'd met with Hunter's Ukrainian business partner in Washington. But really, the reason I wrote the book was the cover-up that came from a much more sinister place than just pure politics. And I think this is a bigger story than the corruption story that involves Joe Biden from his earliest days as a senator. I think the cover-up really reaches into the bowels of these august institutions, these national security institutions, the CIA, the FBI, the State Department, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the IRS, who conspired at various times to protect Joe Biden and ensure that the American people didn't know the truth about one of the candidates for president in 2020. And then we also know that when Hunter Biden was being investigated criminally in Delaware, the Department of Justice and the CIA stepped in to protect him, to make sure that none of the evidence trails would ever be followed that led to Joe Biden, to ensure that, for instance, a cottage on Joe Biden's Wilmington estate that Hunter was living on could never be searched. A search warrant was not allowed to be taken out that the investigators wanted. For instance, the CIA called in the prosecutors to Langley and said to them, you really can't interview Kevin Morris, who was Hunter Biden's sugar brother, as his business partners called him, the man who lent Hunter upwards of $6 million to pay off his overdue tax bill and to live in the lifestyle that all the Bidens like to live in, which is, a $30,000 rental in Malibu.
Miranda, can you speak about this Morris guy a little bit more? Why would the CIA protect this guy? What's he to them?
Well, Joe Biden has been a useful puppet since he arrived at the age of 30 in sort of the accidental senator from Delaware, having won just by a few votes. He was immediately mentored by some pretty powerful Democrats in the Senate and Republicans, actually. Many of their wives felt sorry for the young senator because he'd just lost his wife and baby daughter. He was seen, I think, by the intelligence community as an empty vessel who would really do anything to further his own ambition and say anything. And so with very few skills and very little to recommend him, not much knowledge of the world, he was elevated to probably the most powerful or one of the most powerful roles in the Senate, and that was chairman or ranking member for a decade of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And there he was one of the first senators to travel to China, and he was wined and dined by the top CCP officials on the equivalent of Martha's Vineyard, and came back and was waxing lyrical, much like Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate, did when he went to China and visited 30 times mysteriously. In fact, Joe Biden was so embarrassing in his love of China and his praise of it, that the Weekly Standard at the time, this was, I think, back in the 90s, excoriated him and mocked him mercilessly, I think on the cover, as, you know, the sort of Manchurian candidate in waiting. So that was, and Joe Biden was belligerent. Whatever the sort of military, the most extreme hawks of the military industrial complex wanted, that was Joe Biden. You know, he wanted to bomb Belgrade. He was all about expanding NATO and regime change in Russia. And so he's their guy. He's the blobs guy, as the Obama people described that triumvirate of the CIA, the State Department, and the Pentagon. And I mean, Donald Trump is an existential threat, not to democracy, not to America, but to them, to their agenda. And their agenda, which is not, is opaque. The American people really don't know it and don't, wouldn't sign off on it. And Donald Trump, as president, presided over remarkable peace around the world. And that was because he approached foreign policy like he did domestic policy, just from first principles, you know, like a developer from Queens who just saw a problem and figured out the most efficient way to fix it, rather than following some obscure agenda handed down to him by his masters in the blob. That's why they hate him, and that's why they will do whatever it takes to ensure that he doesn't win this year.
That's interesting you bring that up, Miranda, because that's been a theory of mine. I've been trying to work out in my head for quite some time why the resistance to Trump is so severe. He's not a hard right Republican by any stretch of the imagination. He's a fairly moderate guy on many things, but they speak about him like he's the second coming of Francisco Franco. And I always suspected it was tied to his foreign policy. It's interesting hearing you describe it that way.
Yes, and look, it's interesting. You just see yesterday that Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, was flown into Pennsylvania on a US military aircraft, basically to campaign for Kamala Harris, to trash Donald Trump, to visit a factory that's making missiles or bombs or something, to stand alongside for a picture opportunity, to stand alongside Kamala Harris stooges signing bombs, like Josh Shapiro there. This was, you know, foreign interference in our election. There is early voting going on in Pennsylvania right now. It's just extraordinary the lengths they will go to. And as we saw really from the minute that we found the laptop and were given the laptop by Rudy Giuliani, the hard drive, and started reporting from it, the way that these shadowy figures will come out of the shadows and show themselves, they're not worried about being exposed because I guess they're desperate to, in that sense, shut up our stories, make sure that the laptop was just traduced and discredited as Russian disinformation, which it was not. I mean, it was the FBI had it in their possession and it was used in June. I was sitting in court in Delaware when Hunter Biden was having a trial for those gun felonies, and I saw that laptop, that MacBook Pro, being lifted up by the prosecutor, shown to the jury, walked across the court, shown to the FBI witness who said, yes, that's Hunter Biden's laptop. We verified that it was back in November of 2019. Yes, our forensic experts looked at it and it hasn't been tampered with. And yes, we deemed that it was suitable to be used as evidence in a court of law, which it was used as in Delaware. And again, it was used in the indictment for tax offences that Hunter Biden just pleaded guilty to in California.
Your book, it's The Big Guy. If people want to know just how deep the corruption goes in this government, I would highly recommend you go pick up this wonderful book from Miranda Devine. Miranda, I cannot wait to dig into it myself. I appreciate you very much, as always. Go pick up the book. She's so good at that, at simplifying the tangled web of corruption and going down the rabbit holes to the history of all of it, how much it ties back to Biden, his foreign relations. She's just so good at that stuff. So we love having Miranda on. You know that book will be amazing. All right. Natalie Winters is amazing. Investigative reporter. She's been doing some of the best stuff. She always brings us the best stuff. She's going to join us in a moment. Before she joins us, you know what I did last night? As soon as I popped this earpiece out of my ear, I went and had dinner with Pure Talk and a genuine American hero, a Medal of Honor recipient. We all went out, we got Mexican food and had us a real good time. And let me tell you something. When I say Pure Talk cares about vets, that's why they're here. That's why they were in town. It wasn't to meet me. I was kind of a side item here supporting vets, supporting them with jobs, health care, getting them benefits, getting them back into the world. That's what Pure Talk cares about. What's Verizon care about? AT&T or T-Mobile? Which one do you want to fund? Pure Talk. Switch. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. You'll save a bunch of money and support a company who supports your values. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
The Stop CCP Act, you heard of that? The House came out with it, the Stop CCP Act, and the White House is against it, already came out against it. That's an interesting stance for the American president to take, isn't it? I bet Natalie Winters has some things to discuss about all that. Joining me now, co-host of The War Room, investigative reporter, one of the great ones we have out there, my friend Natalie Winters. Natalie, why would the White House be against stopping the CCP? I thought everyone was against that.
Absolutely absurd. And I think just to frame how they're against it, they sort of preemptively vetoed the bill. In other words, House Republicans haven't even actually passed the Stop CCP Act, but the White House is essentially threatening them to not even try to do that because they say from the get-go they're going to veto it. This is probably the most, I would say, boilerplate bill we've ever seen when it comes to trying to go after the Chinese Communist Party. It's quite literally just sanctioning members of the Chinese Communist Party, limiting their travel abilities and of their family members too. So in other words, Hunter Biden's business partners and Joe Biden's friends. So that's why they're, of course, stepping up. But this is just, again, another example of the very pristine ROI that the Chinese Communist Party has received as a result, not just of pursuing lucrative business deals with Hunter Biden, evidenced, of course, and not solely by the Hunter Biden hard drive, but the more broader systemic capture of people within the White House hoisted up at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, who are both ideologically and, I would argue, financially captured by the interests of the Chinese Communist Party and their robust foreign influence networks.
Natalie, you talk about these foreign influence networks a lot, and honestly, the breadth of the corruption and of foreign influence in our government is staggering. Everyone's been talking about Zelensky touring munitions factories with the governor of Pennsylvania, signing artillery shells. Exactly how compromised is the United States government? I know the Chinese think we're cheap. That's come out. They think American politicians can be bought for super cheap.
Well, look, this Zelensky story is particularly egregious, and not just because they flew him over here on U.S. Air Force planes, but you have to remember it was just last year that it was sort of secretly announced that the White House was issuing a new Ukraine strategy to dupe the American people into sending more of their taxpayer dollars overseas. And that was instead of saying, well, let's, you know, audit these aid packages or actually make the case to the American people, it was no, let's lie to them and say that Ukraine aid packages and continuing to warmonger between Russia and Ukraine, that that's actually great for U.S. manufacturing jobs in the industrial base. That's a direct quote. That's not me paraphrasing. So it's very interesting that you now see Zelensky, who I think it's fair to say is the newest Harris surrogate, hitting the campaign trail for her, touring Pennsylvania ammunition factories, saying thank you so much. Look at what the Ukraine conflict has, you know, brought you guys in terms of investment and finances and money, when in reality we know the Ukraine war has only really been a boon to the military industrial complex. There's no surprise there. But Jesse, I mean, we could probably do shows until 2030 and we would still have material to go through how all these leaders are compromised, particularly by the Chinese Communist Party. But I think the most poignant point to make is that it was Trump who shut down a lot of these foreign influence operations, and Biden went out of his way to reverse a lot of these sanctions and allow these operations to continue.
Yeah, it seems like it was only yesterday they busted a brothel in the D.C. area, supposedly some high-dollar brothel, and its customers were all politicians and generals and tech guys. Like All right. Anyway, Natalie, the CR, the continuing resolution in Congress, the SAVE Act, no SAVE Act, any CR is a scandal. These people are spending us into inflation. I would have much rather have seen the SAVE Act there. But I mean, any CR is a scandal. But now we don't even treat it like that. We're haggling over the Titanic as it sinks beneath the waves.
100%. There's this false paradigm that we could have either had CR plus SAVE Act or a clean CR, right? And that's patently false. We've always said from the get-go that we want single subject spending bills. That is the House of Representatives' job. And they've done some of it only because we've forced them to do so. About 75% of the government has been funded. But you know, taking a 6-week vacation when you don't have your job done doesn't really make the case that you guys are doing everything you can to fight for election integrity, let alone it's an issue that's only important because MAGA forced the conversation on that and people are sitting in federal prison and rotting because of those issues, those who actually have held the line on election integrity. But now all of a sudden that you see the SAVE Act stripped from the SAVE Act plus 6 months CR, which again, Biden said he was going to veto it. The Senate was going to strip it anyways. It's very interesting and it really shows you just how feckless these Republicans are, because instead of then pivoting to a 6-month CR or saying, hey, you know what, Senate, we're not going to send you any funding bills until you actually hold a vote on the SAVE Act, which we passed in July, they said, you know what, we're actually going to do a 3-month CR, which is basically the surrender caucus. And that's particularly worse, especially if Donald Trump were to win again, because then it is setting them up to have an omnibus come December. And I know Speaker Johnson is saying, oh, well, we're not going to have an omnibus, but it's patently false. They'll say, oh, we can't get a majority. And he already tacitly admitted saying, well, maybe we'll do some minibus spending. So in other words, we won't give you an omnibus. We'll just bifurcate it into two minibuses that basically equate to an omnibus. And last thing on this, if the White House and Senate Democrats are coming out and endorsing your 3-month CR, Speaker Johnson, I guess they haven't wheeled out the Liz Cheney endorsement, probably means you're on the wrong side of history.
Natalie, how's Steve Bannon doing? I know he's still rotting in jail for another, 37, 38 days, something like that.
Well, thanks to the regime that Speaker Johnson and his Republican lackeys want to fund, so much so they want to make sure that Matthew Graves can get his 6-figure salary the same day that he's putting out letters to demand that Steve Bannon doesn't get an early release. So that's quite interesting. But, you know, knock on wood, Steve is doing great from prison with the limited capabilities that he has. He's very up to date on the news and, you know, of course, opposed to a CR like we always have been. And I encourage you know, House Republicans, I know Steve would probably get mad at us for even taking time to talk about him and not wasting it, or rather not allocating it towards talking about the election. But I think for all the audience, you know, your audience, the Warren audience included, you know, Congress waited, what was it, 48 hours until Stephen K. Bannon had to surrender to FCI Danbury to actually do anything about it. It's the same type of thing, the same BS and tricks that they're pulling, whether it's election integrity and the SAVE Act, or this forced kind of shutdown debate that we now have to have, where they use the delay of time to then be the evidence that they use to footnote and really bolster the reason why we need to jam through CRs. It's how Washington works, and I think people are sick of it, and shows like yours, shows like War Room, believe me, much to their dismay, are going to continue to call it out, because Washington is not working for the every average, you know, average people. It works for its lobbyists and its donor class, and it's so in your face, and the Steve Bannon case is just another perfect example of it.
Has he talked about the food? I'll be honest, because I assume they're going to arrest me at some point for something, some made-up crime, too. And I'm really stressed about the food. It's not even the bunks, really. I'm used to my feet hanging off the end of the bed. It happens. But the food situation, I'm really, really concerned. Has he mentioned it?
You know, the only email correspondence that we have and that he has with our broader team really is just focused on news articles and the election. I kid you not.
Oh.
He is so task oriented. It's amazing. But I'll probably be joining you in that prison, especially as we work hard on opposing this CR. So maybe there'll be a special bunk. Maybe I could be trans. We could probably be in the same prison in Biden's America. That's probably allowed. We could be in the special CR wing for those of us who don't want to continue funding our own demise in the form of funding the Biden regime.
That'll be perfect. Then you can cook and we'll be fine. Anyway, Natalie Winters, thank you. I appreciate it. We're going to talk more about our disgusting justice system next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
George Soros. Well, I mean, like, you don't have to travel far if you pay attention to any, especially right-wing media. You're going to hear the name Soros at some point in time. Foreign-born billionaires, been a political activist for every left-wing cause for years. Now George's son Alex has taken over lots of that now that Daddy Eyebags is getting a little bit too old for it. And what do you know? Tim Walz was just pictured sitting with Soros the second time they've met in the last month. But what influence do these people have on street crime, which seems to be going up? Let's talk to Matt Murphy. I had him on my radio show last week. He was so good. He's got this sick book up, which we'll get to in a minute. Matt, you are former DA. The Soroses, what are they doing on the ground? How does it affect crime in L.A., Chicago, cities? What are they doing?
Well, I think the way it affects crime in L.A. and some of these other cities is sort of readily apparent for anybody who lives there. You've got essentially the whole defund the police movement. There's more than one way to skin that cat. And the Soros organization has embraced that wholeheartedly. And they backed these so-called, quote unquote, progressive DAs who come in. They're very eager to prosecute police officers, but it seems like pretty much nobody else. And what you see is you see crime waves striking a lot of these cities. And, you know, if you live in L.A., I grew up here, Skid Row used to be about four blocks. Now it is mile after mile after mile. The only city I've ever been to that compares to it is Mumbai, India. You know, you just see these homeless encampments going forever. And look, those people, tragic as it may be, a lot of them are street addicts. And to support those drug habits, they steal, they rob. A lot of them have been paroled from state prison. A lot of them committed violent felonies in the past and will do so in the future. And it's just a friggin' disaster for the city of Los Angeles. And by the way, you know, you said something that just caught my ear. You talked about right wing media covering this. This has really nothing to do, in my view, with anybody's politics. Like, if you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you're in the middle, or you've never voted in your life, if you got kids, man, you got to pay attention to this stuff. This guy rolled in. He's the former DA of San Francisco. He came in. He unseated a woman who is a lifelong Democrat, who I respect to death. Her name is Jackie Lacey, first woman DA of Los Angeles County, first Black person who's DA of Los Angeles County, and she did the job. And everybody liked her. Victims liked her, police liked her prosecutors liked her, but she wasn't far enough left for some of the people like the Soros organization. And they funded this guy who came in his very first day. He issued these sweeping edicts concerning enhancements and some of the legal reform that happened in the 1990s after some of the horrific revolving door justice that we had. And he is undoing that. So the term progressive just drives me crazy. And I'm a politically very moderate guy. I consider myself to be right in the middle on most issues. But when it comes to this, it's madness what they're doing. There's nothing progressive about this. This is regressive policy that is taking us back to the revolving door justice system that we had in the 1970s and 80s. Yeah, there he is on the screen. That's my guy. I represented the families of two police officers who were murdered in the line of duty. And this guy did everything he could, that guy right there, to get the killers of those police officers out of custody. And it was outrageous. We fought him in court. Fortunately, on those two cases, we won. But there's an election coming up. There's a guy named Nathan Hochman who's running against that turkey. And for the voters of Los Angeles who care about public safety, they got to educate themselves on this. That man is not a friend to victims. That man is not a friend to these poor neighborhoods that these guys get paroled out into. And I'm sorry to rant here for you, but let me just give you one example of one of the policies he issued the very first day. There's a thing called BPT lifer hearings. That's the border prison terms. Lifers in the state of California include child molesters, rapists, and murderers. Those are essentially the three categories that you can do life in prison for. His very first day, what you do on those things is every DA, every responsible DA in the state of California and probably every state in America, when a life prisoner comes up, they send one of their deputies with the file from the DA's office to go in and to review it and to ensure that if that person poses a risk, that they're there with the correct information to explain it to the board to make sure that guy doesn't get out if he continues to pose a risk to public safety. That is routinely done. That was something that I did as a part of my job for 17 years. Physically go to the prison, and if the guy is denying it, if he's not showing proper remorse, if the victim's family is still traumatized, whatever it may be that poses a continuing risk, you make sure the board knows that so that they can issue an informed decision. He immediately forbade all of his prosecutors from going and doing that. I got into it with one of his main lieutenants on the phone one day, and it is unreal that they did that. And the voters of Los Angeles have no clue that that was one of the first things. It is horrific for public safety, and it's destroying the city that I love and that I grew up in.
Yeah, it is a shame too, man. I didn't even recognize LA last time I touched down, and man, I've had some great times in that city. You know, I don't want to leave this stuff exactly, but I want to talk very, very briefly about the P. Diddy thing. Now, I don't do a lot of entertainment, pop talk, and I don't care about that stuff. And it's a family show, and it's really, really gross, a lot of the stuff that I've seen about that. But this case is a really, really big deal for a variety of reasons. Why?
Well, I can tell you one thing about the Diddy case is, you know, when we saw all those famous videos of them rolling in the Bearcats, those are those military vehicles with the long guns, that was in Los Angeles County. And when you look at this case, you know, he's accused and he's presumed innocent. I got to say that as a practicing lawyer. But, you know, these are when you're talking about the sexual abuse en masse and a systematic organization that he's accused of using to effectuate these instances of sexual abuse. And we'll see. This is going to be a sensational trial. But the one person that was not on that stage, you know, when this thing came down again, was George Gascon. And it was the same thing in the Matthew Perry case. That was a drug ring that was busted up that was charged essentially with running amok in the city of Los Angeles that supplied Matthew Perry the drugs that ultimately killed him. And, you know, when we saw John Belushi, when he got that hot shot back in the day, That person was prosecuted by the Los Angeles DA's office. When Michael Jackson died, that person, Dr. Murray, was prosecuted properly by the Los Angeles DA's office. Now, it's what we're seeing in LA is we're seeing these federal agencies coming in to enforce law in the city of Los Angeles. And that is a direct result of the Soros organization. Defund the police is one of the dumbest things ever uttered in a public comment section. It's emotional. It's like we're dealing with teenagers. But that guy right there, George Gascon, what he did is he's running a 300 prosecutor deficit in his office right now. Imagine that. 300 lawyers down out of an office of about 1,000 when it's operating correctly. So one of the ways he's done to not enforce crime is he just hasn't hired new prosecutors. And those that are working for him have been leaving en masse because he's a nightmare to work for. So it's so the Diddy case is another example of a case in Los Angeles that if we had proper law enforcement, this is not the police. This is the election of that guy, former DA of San Francisco, George Soros. He treats victims horribly. In my opinion, he's the worst thing for public safety, in my opinion, that has ever happened to this city.
Yeah, he is. Matt, I want to talk about your book, The Book of Murder. I mean, you talk about serial killers. Let's just stay on that here. What's it like? Because you have to have intimate knowledge of this stuff. Matt, I don't even like watching one of my wife's sicko documentaries about this serial killer or that serial killer, but you have to dig into all the details, and doesn't that affect you? How do you eat breakfast after digging into the sick crap these people do?
Well, you know, my plan was I was going to be a DA for 3 years, and what happens is you meet the victims' families, you meet these moms, and you know, you work for them. Really, you want to do what you can to bring justice to the victims' families. And what we do in Orange County, it's a vertical system. So we wind up going to the scene and we follow the case from the ground all the way up, and it becomes a part of your life. And one of the chapters in that book is about a guy named Rodney Alcala. Anna Kendrick has an amazing movie coming out on Netflix. That I got to help out a little bit on, which is a huge honor to do. And look, he's kind of a perfect example. This guy was a true blue American serial killer, kidnapped and raped an 8-year-old girl in 1968. And he fled to New York, and he was caught in New York. He was extradited back to California. He received a life sentence back in the early 70s. And this guy, Rodney Alcala, was paroled after 34 months. And after his parole, he probably murdered about 100 people, if you do the math. And we prosecuted him between Orange County and Los Angeles County. We prosecuted him for 5. He did at least 5 that we know of in New York, 1 probably in Vermont, another one he was charged with in Wyoming. He was cleared to 1 in Marin County outside of San Francisco, probably 1 in Texas. Certainly, he's suspected of 2 more in San Diego. So this guy was an absolute monster. He had a life sentence. In 1971, he was paroled after 34 months, and he went on a killing spree. And, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, sex workers are absolutely, in my experience, they are worthy of our sympathy and our support. You know, women, especially if they're addicts, they go down a rabbit hole, but they put themselves in positions of vulnerability, and they tend to be the targets of serial killers. What Rodney Alcala did, Rodney Alcala was preying on women that aren't making bad decisions necessarily in their life, or aren't struggling with you know, the horrors of addiction. He was following women home from bars. His victims included a 12-year-old girl in Huntington Beach named Robin Samso, a woman in Malibu who's a pediatric cancer nurse named Georgia Wickstead, a legal secretary named Charlotte Lamb, a computer programmer named Jill Parenteau. Like, the list goes on and on and on. Like, really nice people, and they were nice, young, and he had a type. They were beautiful, and he would murder them in the most sadistic manners possible. Like, it just, the stuff I saw in that case just would, you'd lose sleep over it tonight if I told you all the things that we saw in that. And that man never should have been out of custody, you know, and that's the world that people like George Soros and George Gascon are trying to take us back to, that those policies don't work. Innocent people suffer. And they're doing everything they can to take us right back there. And you can either kind of throw your hands up and resign to it or decide you're going to fight. I've decided I want to fight, which is one of the reasons I'm really glad you had me on your show and asked me these questions. The public is, they just don't know. People don't know. They don't know until they're the victims of violent crime or somebody that they love is murdered or raped. And that, and they're doing everything they can to get these guys out of prison. And I can tell you right now, sex offenders do not reform. Sex offenders don't get better after therapy. In fact, there have been published academic studies indicating that they're the one demographic that actually gets worse with therapy. So they get better at getting away with it, and they're harder to catch. But there's a certain percentage of our population, going back to ancient Rome, that is fundamentally predatory. And it's simple math. The more of those guys you keep in prison for longer periods, the more innocent people are safe. And statistically, the numbers bear that out. And that's another thing. There's a great Mark Twain quote. There's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics, right? And I'll tell you, I've seen Gascon manipulate like the parole statistics. That was a part of my job. I will debate that man or any of his ilk anytime, anywhere, and I will break down those numbers for the public. It is shocking what they're doing, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and try to raise some awareness to that.
I'm glad you did, Matt. He is Matt Murphy, author. Go get The Book of Murder. How intense is that book going to be? And George Gascon superfan, Matt Murphy. Matt, thank you, my brother. Please come back soon. I appreciate you. Dude's awesome, right? It's awesome. I found out we were going to have a prosecutor on. Matt and I, producer Matt and I, were talking about it. And I'm not sure, and I'm telling you, dude is awesome. Dude can come back anytime. I wouldn't want to be George Gascon. Anyway, I did a longer interview with him on the radio, more about the book and the murders and what it's like to be a DA. If you're interested in that, go at thefirsttv.com/podcast. Thefirsttv.com/podcast. You can get a podcast of my radio show that I do every day if you want to hear more from Matt. Anyway, we have Light in the Mood next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And normally this segment is just that. It's something that hopefully lightens your mood, makes you laugh a little bit. But I think we're going to do shift gears a little bit today and have more of a serious talk as we wrap up the show. Listen, your ice maker. We've been talking about this for a long time. Now, you know, not that I would brag about it, that I purchased a countertop ice maker. So it's just all day, it's just ice, ice, ice. It's have so much ice. And yeah, the wife threatened to throw it away this morning if I mentioned it again, but I'm going to keep mentioning the ice maker. It sits on the counter, and that's what it does. It makes ice. And maybe, and when I brought this up, maybe you're sitting there saying to yourself, Jesse, I don't need that. Jesse, my freezer makes ice. Okay? You want to risk this?
Okay, so after 4 months, we thought the ice maker would have stopped, but we think it kept going, so let's see what happens. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay, that's a little bit of ice.
Look like fun to you? You know what? I'm not going to stress if that happens in my house. I have other sources of ice. Do you? All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.